by the beginning of February.
Without any additions is what I'm saying as well. Like this current unit of players.
I don't know if this current unit of players could go in if you had to, if the running game wasn't going, and if you had to go on and win a Super Bowl, I would question it. So you know what I'm saying? Now, if you got running, if you're doing everything, yes, it's a good complement unit. Now, especially with Samuels here, E-Man having Emmanuel, he brought a lot. And you got your tight end, he brings a lot. But if you said, hey, can anyone else, if we bracket those two and play press man on the other guys and said, two guys, we can bracket. We're going to bracket, you know, Kittle and Samuels and E-Man. So Emmanuel. So if we take those two, double those guys and try to do, and now let's make another receiver beat you. Do I think the consistency is there right now? Do I think that in the Super Bowl and the playoffs, when your hand's sweating, the game's different, the balls are coming out different, the ball gets smaller and smaller, now your heart's beating, everything's up, you know it's win or go home, and these guys haven't been in a situation? No. They haven't seen it.
Super Bowl is a game that carries a little bit of pressure, yeah, from what I understand. I haven't played in one, but I heard there's some pressure.
A little bit of adjustments, too, when you got a 30-minute halftime.
Right.
And that's where you get into, you know, and I was thinking about, as you were talking about, Antonio Brown, if they potentially would face off with New England, the last team that had gotten rid of them. The storylines you were mentioning with the Super Bowl, that would be fascinating.
I don't even need a game. Just give me the storylines.
Watching all the media try to get to Belichick for a response on Antonio Brown. And what do you think about Brown with the Niners?
We're
six touchdowns.
Niners.
He seems to have landed on his feet. Belichick is just ignoring him.
I'm trying to get my team together.
Yeah. Oh, you're doing your Belichick.
We're just here to focus on our Super Bowl.
Nice. On our Super Bowl.
I think if you go back through the course of history, you've had a variety of different teams win the Super Bowl with a variety of different styles. Some teams have come in as an absolute freight train. Look at it's the first thing I think of to draw the parallel. It's not to make a shot, but like when the Rams won that Super Bowl, that was the greatest show on turf, right? That was an offensive-minded team. Baltimore, a defensive-minded team. You had teams that have stood out. You have teams that have won with very good balance. Philadelphia was the type of team that had some balance. A lot of New England wins have been with balance. Seattle was a little bit more defensive. Denver, the year they won, straight defense because Manning couldn't even play much quarterback that year. When the Bears got there with Rex Grossman, that was clearly defense, losing to a Colts team that was all about the offense. So there are teams that have won with balance. There are teams that have won being defensive heavy. There are teams that have won being offensive heavy. When it comes to the question of whether or not this team has a wide receiving unit that is Super Bowl caliber, I say yes. If you don't make any moves now and everyone stays healthy, I think you have that because you are going to lean on one of the league's top defenses. I'm not going to say top defense because maybe they're not that, but I think they're good enough to really control the tempo throughout the course of the playoffs. I think you can count on these guys to get big stops when it's needed. That's what you need in the playoffs. I think they can win a game on the road. That's what you need in the playoffs. When you go to the quarterback, I've said it from the beginning, I still believe he is capable of winning a Super Bowl. That does not mean he will play like Joe Montana or Steve Young.
Right.
It doesn't mean he's going to play like Brad Johnson or Trent Dilfer, but I think he's got what it takes to navigate the playoffs and make the big plays in the big spots. He doesn't seem like someone who's going to shrink. Kirk Cousins strikes me as a guy who would shrink. Kirk Cousins strikes me as a guy where if you're down three going to the fourth in the Super Bowl, it's going to be too much for him. There are guys where the situation is too much, Donovan McNabb. There are guys that thrive in that scenario, Tom Brady at all. So now I think you've got the quarterback. I think you're healthy enough with the O-line. I certainly think you have the coaching. And everyone who loves to take a shot at Shanahan for what happened in the second half of that game in the Atlanta-New England Super Bowl, I say good. You don't think he's learned from that? You don't think that experience is going to pay huge dividends in the playoffs and for the rest of Kyle's career? You think he just moved past that game and thought, it's whatever, it's put in the rearview mirror? No, you learn from that sort of thing. You need that sort of thing to keep moving forward. How many elections did Abraham Lincoln lose before he finally was elected to any office? I think it was like 8 elections. That guy's like the all-time story of just coming back over and over and over again after suffering so many failures. So I think you're going to have the O-line. I'm convinced you got the quarterback. I know you got the running game. I know you got the head coach and you got the defense. Special teams could be a bit of a concern right now. We can get into the Robbie Gould thing at some point. But the bottom line is you're checking pretty much all the boxes. You're 8-0. You might have home field. I don't necessarily think you have to worry too much about whether or not you have a wide receiver unit capable of winning a Super Bowl. I think you've got everything it takes that as a team, it's good enough to win a Super Bowl.
Ultimately, if you need this wide receiver unit and Jimmy Garoppolo to carry you to a Super Bowl, you're probably not going to be there in the first place because of what you said about the best foot forward for this team is its defense. It's the pass rush. It's the defense. It's the ability to run the football. Then fourth on the list would probably be the passing attack with George Kittle, and then would be the wide receiver. So if you get into a game where maybe you're playing Kansas City in the Super Bowl and Mahomes is lighting you up and it's 21-14, or maybe you're down 28-17 and you got to really air it out to try to win that game, I think you got problems with this wide receiver core. But ultimately, your success will be pinned on the ability to possess the ball, run the ball, and get after the quarterback, which is how you've won these games so far.
Let me ask you guys a question. And this is not hypothetical. This is facts. I want to deal in not a receiver coming. I don't want to deal in who's coming back. I want to deal in the now. We just said we have the running backs. We have the team, especially the defense, to win the Super Bowl. We think it's capable. Do you guys think in the next 5 weeks we change the way that you guys view this defense? When you look at the quarterbacks, any of these quarterbacks that they played this far this year, you have not played yet a top 15 quarterback, in my opinion, top 10 quarterback. If you said right now, has this particular defense went against a top 10 quarterbacks in the league, would you say yes, no? And I'm just asking.
No. Say no. No.
Okay.
I mean, we could argue about top 15 with Kyler. Yesterday we did the Kyler Murray, Jared Goff thing. Neither of those guys is top 10. So
you talk top 23, Dalton might slide in.
Yeah, top 19. I think you may have played a couple of those guys.
Top 26, maybe we're talking Winston.
That's what I'm saying.
Maybe so, Mason Rudolph, top 28.
And if that's the case, then how do you guys, I mean, moving forward, looking at what's at stake here the next 5 weeks, do you think we'll have the same conversation in 5 weeks? Can we view this defense? Is it what we think it is? Is it going to hold up? Has it been tested in this caliber, what we're getting ready to see in this stretch?
It hasn't been tested, and I think that's a great point because they're going to give up more points over the next five games than they've averaged so far. I think we all would – I mean, I certainly would think that because they're averaging, what, giving up 13 a game over your first eight? These five offenses are probably going to score more than 13 a game on average, but does that mean we change our perception about who this defense is? I don't see them going out there and giving up 35 to anybody, for example.
If Baltimore pops you for 35, and then the Saints come back and get you for 35, we're having a different conversation, especially if Rodgers got you for four touchdowns a couple weeks prior to that.
Okay.
But if you go out and you play Rodgers and it's 31-28, then you go to Baltimore and it's 24-21, then you go to New Orleans and it's 2017, something like that, you would expect there to be more production from the other side, given the level of opponent and the situation. As long as the dam doesn't break. If the dam breaks, then you're like, all right, we totally overvalued these guys. But if you go to New Orleans and you lose 24-20, that's not the end of the world. You're not going to look at the defense and go, that's terrible. Like right now, similar situation in New England. That defense was compared to the 85 Bears, for crying out loud. Then they went to Baltimore for their first test, and Lamar Jackson hung it on them. So now, what do? Do you act like an idiot and go, oh my God, this defense is terrible? No. You realize they're not the 85 Bears. That's the only thing you learned in that game, was that they're not the 85 Bears. Still good. Still capable of winning a Super Bowl.
Right.
But now we're going to watch them a little bit more closely and wonder if the competition increases. Are they a very good defense? Are they above average defense? But they're not 85. That's what that game showed us. We took 85 off the table.
Right. 85 is off the table. And because I'm asking that, because now if that's the case, if you're looking at it in that regard, and we talked about time. Let's talk about this time of possession for the offense. It's a lot of it's predicated because how many times the defense, you talked about it on the numbers, Joe, because you always did the number guy, but how many times predicated that the defense third and got them off the field?
Right, three and out.
So what does that do? That gives the offense more opportunities to score these points that we've been able to see. So now if that's gone away, now what are we going to get to see about the offense?
It's a double whammy. You're absolutely right, because it also gives you the idea to where you can run the ball knowing that you've got Mitch Wischnowski, Special Teams Player of the Week, in case you do have
shout
to
shout it
punt.
Out.
I had to shout it out. I had to get ahead of it. It's like when I talk about LeBron, it's sometimes good for me to do that instead of other people. But I think that helps you, Lo.
Does that need it?
Your defense is sturdy. You can run the ball knowing that you can punt it away, knowing that your defense is a three-and-out machine. So it also protects that passing attack because you don't have to be as risky because you're more likely to be in front. So it is a double whammy. If the defense starts to show increased vulnerability, then there's more stress on the exact thing we're talking about, which is the pass game.
Eric in San Francisco. Eric, thank you for the phone call. Welcome to the show. Floor is yours.
Hey, guys. Antonio Brown, when he wanted out of Pittsburgh, he wanted a contract. He didn't want to be treated like a piece of meat or a commodity or like a farm animal. He's being traded around, this and that. there's an underlying sense in the NFL, some players, that they are treated like pieces of meat. Just whatever, go here, go left, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. So this guy was one of those types of, you know, personalities, A-type, where he wanted to make sure he had control over where he went. And what ended up happening, he ended up getting traded to Oakland. He didn't want to go to Oakland, so he used every avenue to get out of Oakland. And finally, I don't agree with how he got out of Oakland. It's, you know, it's kind of embarrassing, to be honest with you. It's a shame. But at the same time, when he decided to go to a team, he picked the Patriots, and obviously we know what happened there, and some of it is his fault. You know, it's still under investigation. But the bottom line is, if the 49ers want to, you know, take a look at this guy, guess what? He wanted to go to San Francisco in the first place. He wanted to go to the best wide receiving team in the history of the league. He talked to Jerry Rice. There was a need for him on this team before we got Emmanuel Sanders. And if he goes there, guess what? It's going to be a juggernaut. It's going to be a juggernaut. Who's going to stop his receiving core? Who's going to stop the tight end? You know, the running backs out of the flat, the running game, the fullback. It's going to be a machine. You're looking at the 94 49ers all over again without offense. That's what I'm talking about.
Whoa. Thank you for the phone call.
Compare him to Jerry Rice. You got other receivers, Samuels, and look at E-Man. You know, not over the long haul, but just...
Just the season. You're looking for one Super Bowl. You got Antonio Brown on one side. You got Emmanuel Sanders on the other. You got George Kittle running down the middle. You might have Deebo Samuel. I got to be very careful.
I know.
There's so much going on.
Man,
you got him in the slot. Right. Oh, by the way, the opposing defense will never be able to be in their base package. They're sitting in nickel or dime the whole game, which now opens up your running game if Juszczyk finds a way on the field as well. I mean, wow, is what that becomes. Trying to defend something like that, especially if they don't sub personnel. Like, that's the key to the whole thing. If you are able to put together a personnel package involving that much firepower in the passing game, but you're still able to run it, if you never sub anyone off the field, the defense can't sub. So what are they going to do? If they go base, you're going to kill them through the air. If they come out with their nickel or dime to cover your passing game, you're probably going to gash them to get to death. And then all of a sudden, the defense doesn't need to be an elite unit. They just need to get some stops here and there. And you've gone from being a defensive-minded team over the first half of the season to an offensive-minded team over the second half. But again, it comes down to the risk. There is a reason a very talented wide receiver could be available for very, very cheap. And that's because there is extraordinary risk. That's the big question. Chris in Modesto. Chris, thank you for the phone call. Welcome to the show. Your thoughts on Antonio Brown and everything in between.
Well, this case with Brown just simply highlights society's reluctance to really consider mental illness as a real thing. If he had gotten injured, say, with an Achilles, nobody would be having this conversation. This segment wouldn't even exist. But I would ask now, what would someone like Brown or anybody in this position have to do for mental illness like what I think, personally, he has demonstrated to be really considered as having crossed that threshold?
It's an interesting case, Chris, because and Lo can speak to this better than anyone. There's a certain sense in pro sports, especially the NFL, about being a tough guy and playing through pain. And even if he did have mental illness, if he felt like he had some things that he wanted to get addressed, you don't normally see that in pro sports, Lo, let alone the NFL, where a guy steps out and says, I need help. It's a sign of weakness that alpha males don't often go through.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And, you know, hopefully they're, you know, with guys coming out now, you know, Marshall and a lot more guys, you know, the swimmer, Michael Phelps, a lot of these guys are coming out saying, hey, look, I deal with these suicidal issues. I deal with these issues. And a lot of black men don't deal with suicide. They don't the black community don't necessarily talk about suicide and those things. And you see even black preachers and, you know, opting out, you know, decide having a permanent solution for a temporary problem. And in the black cultures, you don't talk about necessary suicide and those different things. So there's a lot of things that, like the callers talking about with mental illness. And football's a game. It's not about the life. This doesn't change our lives, which is what we do radio. But he's right about sometimes mental illness. It's for real. It's out there.
You've seen just recently some players come out and be a little bit more open with it and try to convey the message to help others. Kevin Love in the NBA.
Right.
But again, that speaks to what you're saying. It not necessarily black players, white players.
Yeah.
But I think Brandon Marshall, the former Bronco, Dolphin, Bear, Jet wide receiver. Man, I can't believe I was able to just boom, boom, boom like that.
Ping pong.
I think I had him in my fantasy league like every single year. That's why I'm so familiar with it.
He's
spoken out on the issues he had. I think he had talked about if he went off his medication, he was a completely different dude. Completely different dude. And he was a guy that was seen as a malcontent early in his career, and then it turned out there were some issues behind beneath the surface, but no one wants to talk about him because, like you say, maybe that's something that could hurt you in the locker room, yeah. hurt you in a culture where people don't necessarily talk about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I've seen guys go off, and you think that you're like, man, are you okay? And they're talking out of their mind, and you, and
like
they're
in the locker room, or
yeah, and you're just like, okay, and you just, you know, might say something to the trainer, and like, okay, I got to check with him. And some guys, even in Diego, Joe, that you great players, you're like, wow. And you wouldn't know. And they wouldn't have their medicine. And they'd want to just tear up the place.
Right.
And, you know, I'm thinking about going to get my knife. Like, you just, you just don't know them. And you don't, because it's not apparent to everyone.
Right. You think about the percentage of people in general society that struggle with mental illness, and then you could take that same percentage and apply it to pro sports.
Wow, yeah.
And you probably would be within the range. And then you add in CTE-related neural challenges that players in football certainly have more than other sports, and you start to get a real decent-sized body of players who probably are struggling with these mental illnesses. I'm not saying Antonio Brown does,
right.
But when you see a pattern of behavior,
right. This isn't about
some of
Antonio
which
Brown.
Could be
this is just,
borderline
right.
criminal, or
right.
you know, as we bring it back to Brown, though, and you think about whether or not to bring a player in, it's tough to
it
really
is.
You know disseminate all these different factors.
Todd in Mill Valley, shout out our friends on the other side of the bridge. Todd, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Big
Fire
team.
Away.
Hey guys, good morning. And I'd love to get Lowe's thoughts on this. You know, when I watched the Niners in the early part of the season, it seemed that their base package was Juszczyk and Coleman, two receivers, one tight end. You know, the reason they brought Coleman and Juszczyk in was they're both exceptional receivers out of the backfield. The thing I worry about with Brown is, let's assume best case scenario, the guy, you know, completely corrects himself. We get him for cheap. There's no risk. I don't really see that there's a need for a Brown at that point in time, and how is he going to react when he's not the number one receiver? I mean, there's four other really competent receivers on the field at that point, and I honestly don't see the Niners shifting away from their run-heavy attack and specifically having a couple of backs out of the backfield that can catch the ball.
Appreciate the phone call, and again, that comes back to the risk factor here. Talking about the idea, it's just the risk versus the reward. There are so many levels of risk, but it's worth talking about because the reward could be so high. You know he can play. The Dez Bryant situation, you're not sure if he can play. Less right. risk there. Wouldn't right. cost a lot of money, but the reward on the other side isn't going to be Dez in his third year in the league when he was lighting it up. It's going to be a guy who's at the tail end of his career, has lost a step, who probably can't separate, but might be able to get on the field to make a couple plays in a key spot. Devin in Fremont. Devin, welcome to the show. Fire away.
Hey, what's up, guys? I just want to say it's not the same situation, but someone like Dwight Howard, the Lakers picked him up. He was a high-risk kind of like guy, and it worked out for him. So maybe he could work out with the Niners and Antonio Brown.
Real quick, with the last call when you're talking about how it would work when you have Coleman and you had Cal Juszczyk. So what would happen is, though, you would have Emmanuel at Z and you would have Brown at X. So you still got the two wide receivers and you still have Kittle at the tight end. So now what that does, sir, now you have two receivers. Now you can't play necessarily. You would have to play more two deep because now you'd have to have two safeties because of their speed and their route running. You couldn't bring eight guys in the box. Now you would bring a safety down. When you don't have two receivers, you would bring a safety down to help stop the run. Now you can't bring a safety down in the box. Now you can continue to run with Juszczyk and what Breida, whoever the running backs may be. And now also you still can use those guys in the passing game, but you can't play a lot of man-to-man. So what are you going to do? How do you pick your poison? So actually, with having a receiver like that, it would be more hard to defend.
Football Friday brought to you by Oaks Card Club. Play it smart, play it Oaks, and Xfinity. All right, we got a lot to get to here. Big game last night at the Coliseum. What are the chances the Raiders, based on the schedule that's upcoming, find their way into the postseason? We've got that. We've got wristbands to give away for the pre- and post-party down at Levi's Stadium for Monday night's game against the Seahawks. That's on the other side as well. Man versus Machine, Bob and the Billions. Big swing coming up. All brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises. Here's Anna with what's coming up on the game.
All right, thanks, Joe. What's coming up on the game is sponsored by Wave Broadband. A shorthanded Warrior team will face the Timberwolves tonight and hope to get D'Angelo Russell back on the court. D'Lo was upgraded to probable. Coverage starts in Minnesota at 3:30 with Warriors warm-up, then tip-off at 5 right here on 95.7 The Game. The 49ers and Seahawks rivalry is back, and 95.7 The Game will broadcast all day at the Santa Clara Hilton ahead of Monday Night Football Showdown. Coming up next, we're giving away another pair of all-you-can-eat wristbands for the Hilton's tailgate and after party. Then at 8:45, we have Man vs. Machine, where the fate of mankind relies on making the right pick. Should San Francisco make a play for Antonio Brown? Well, Joe Lo and Dibs will continue the discussion as former NFL wide receiver Drew Bennett at 9:05. And the Raiders picked off Phillip Rivers three times in Oakland's 26-24 win over the Chargers. Can they make the playoffs? The guys will discuss. From video chatting with family to streaming music with friends, high-speed internet service from Wave brings you closer to the things you love and the people you care about the most. Right now, get high-speed internet starting at $19.95 a month for 6 months. Visit GoWave.com for details. I'm Anna Kagadagas on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lo and Dibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Ladies and gentlemen, here he is.
I made a mistake. I took a big bite.
That's right. We got you. That's what we're doing.
I was
going
to give you the big intro. Yeah.
You guys go ahead and do the big thing.
Here we go.
In his fifth year, he's a fifth-year senior from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Currently chewing and swallowing
pretzels.
Thank you, Joey Stacks. Fort.
Keep going.
Then the crowd goes wild.
Right, the crowd goes wild.
Then he bursts in through the side door.
He's just scrolling in like I do.
You realize the option of just talking about sports for 36 seconds is also in play there, right?
No.
Oh, my God.
I like that better.
Thank you, Anna. Appreciate your support.
No problem.
Anna, let's call another meeting on Wednesday and let's talk all about it. I'm sure everyone will be thrilled.
You know what, Joe? You're dead to me. That's it.
All right. So, Man vs. Machine at 8:45. Bob and the Billions coming up right after that. We've got the wristbands to give away right now. We have a pair of wristbands for the pre and post party down at Levi's Stadium between the Niners and the Seahawks Monday night. Thing goes for like 3 hours after the game ends. It's all you can eat, all you can drink.
Awesome.
Caller number 10 right now to the contest line, 844-999-GAME. 844-999-4263. Caller number 10 right now to the contest line will win those two wristbands. A reminder, we will be down there broadcasting beginning at 6 a.m. It's Joe Lowe and Dibs, Bonte Steiny and Guru, Damon Ratto and Kolsky, the works. We're going all the way up to the game. Let's, however, begin this segment right here.
The hand. Big hole. First down. End zone. Touchdown, Jacobs. Touchdown, Raiders. Would you believe it? Off the bench, the offensive line blows the hole open against that nine-man box, and Jacobs takes it home. Roll Tide, baby!
Final game from the final primetime game in the history of the Coliseum. Your Oakland Raiders 26, the Los Angeles Chargers 24. Silver and black now 5-4 on the season. 4-1 at home. That's with an asterisk. The London game counted as a home game. But at the Coliseum this year, 3-1. Defending the turf at the Coliseum as rookie running back Josh Jacobs continues to make his case for the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year award. 16 carries, 71 yards, one touchdown. Hard carries. First contact very rarely, if ever, brings this dude down. But I think the way to start this is just to acknowledge that that was a hell of a football game last night.
It was. Thursday night, usually say you're going to get a dud. Thursday night, you're like, who's going to be playing on this Thursday night? Two teams that are fighting for a playoffs. Two teams that we looked at, both these teams needed this game bad. And Raiders needed it worse. They said, I'm getting this. I'm taking this. So this was a very, very physical game. I tell you, this kid reminds me of Curtis Martin. You know, wears the same number, 28. He runs upright, but he's got a little wiggle in his shoulders, how he just makes guys miss. He cuts really hard, get north and south, runs behind his pads, the physicality that he brings to the table. That was a huge win for this Raider organization. A very huge win, Dan.
Derek Carr with another fourth quarter comeback. I think that's 19 now for his career, fourth quarter or overtime comebacks where he's led the team down the field, and they got it done. And great call by Brent Musburger there with the hole getting blown open, because that hole got blown open. Jacobs makes the one wiggle move. He sees the end zone, burst right into pay dirt, And good for this Raider team. 5-1 now, Low, in one-score games. And a lot of times, that's what it takes to, instead of being a 2-5 team or 2-6, to being a team above 500 and legitimately in the playoff conversation, especially up next, you got Miami and the Jets. Those are games that you rightly should win. So if you're a Raider fan, you're thinking, heck, we should be 7-4 closing in on a legitimate playoff chance.
Yeah, you really should. And then even when you look at the Texans, how that game went down to the wire, that game should have been, could have went either way. And you see what this team's been doing. It's been competing. Green Bay, that's friggin' game right there. We talked about it. Joe, you alluded to it. Special Carr, you know, on that one, he's trying to get for the end zone, and he stretches the ball out and goes in the back of the out. And, you know, it's a, that turns the game around. You had an opportunity right there to be beating Green Bay at halftime with the ball, with getting the ball back. So they've been a very, very competitive team. And right now, they're cooking. And they're cooking in Crisco.
Versus Cincinnati, that's up next. That's winnable. At the Jets, winnable. At Kansas City, we'll call that losable. We'll be reasonable. Yeah. We'll call that one a loss. Yep. Hosting Tennessee, toss-up game, depending on which version the Titans shows up, but certainly winnable. Versus Jacksonville, again, winnable, but that could be tough. At Los Angeles, play the Chargers, could beat them again. You got the Denver Broncos in Denver to finish the season. 7 to go. You can win 5 more of those. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You can win 5 more of those. That put you at 10 wins. That could get you in the playoffs. Down year for the AFC. I mean, right. What do you have? You have the Patriots are going to do their thing. The Bills look like they're challenging. The Ravens are there, and then it's no one else. The Steelers are kind of coming along right now. Kind of coming along. They've won 3 of their last 4. They got a chance to upset the Rams this weekend. You go to the Central. The Jags are not going to be around by the end of the season. The Titans won't be around by the end of the season. The Colts could be, but every single game they've played, I like Miami plus 11.5. Every game they've played this year has been decided by one score.
Yeah.
7 or fewer points every single
every
Colts game this
wow.
season. 8 games. 7 or fewer points. Like the idea of 11.5 with Miami. Plus, Jacoby Brissett banged up knee. T.Y. Hilton's banged up.
Right.
A lot of opportunity.
Right.
And then you can rule out the Chargers. They're not going to be around at the end. And the Broncos won't be around at the end.
Right.
So the chance of making a wild card, what would you say they are right now? 50-50? Or would you go so far, 60-40. Say maybe like 60-40?
Oh,
yes.
Oh, 60-40.
60-40, yes.
Yeah. And Joe, here's the thing. After this weekend, that's why, Jibs, you're going to have a chance to catch up a little bit because Kansas City and them are going to be tied for first place. The Kansas City's going to get a loss this weekend. I look at that game.
They're going to go to Tennessee and lose?
Yeah. They always play. But you see, this is what you've been always saying about Tennessee. The teams they're supposed to beat.
Tennessee is terrible.
Terrible.
Tennessee's terrible.
Every time they're supposed
they
to beat
a team. They should have lost 7 of 8.
Every time they're supposed to beat a team there in a spot, they're like, ah, this team won't win. And all of a sudden when
Mahomes
they
Mahomes is coming back, though.
He looks bad. I watched him practice. He's limping around.
You think that could hurt them?
I hope they. Tennessee would hope that. And Tennessee's got a good defense. And Tennessee's going to run the ball down their throat. I see this game being very, very. A lot
of opportunity there.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I just think that it could be a very, very. That could be a very, very interesting game.
Going into the week, I was watching the Chargers, one of the rare ones I've gotten right this season. Last week, taking the Chargers over the Packers. I'm watching that game, and as that game's ended, I'm going, man, that's a good bet. And then the first thought is, I'm betting against the Chargers next week. Definitely betting against the Chargers. Who are they playing? And then I look and go, oh, that's the Thursday night game against Oakland. So it's like, all right, Oakland, this is an interesting situation. Coliseum, we saw how the fans can have an effect in week one against Denver. We've seen it time and time again. More on that in a second. But I'm thinking to myself, okay, this situation sets up kind of nice. Kind of nice. I like this. Then I made the mistake of talking to some guys who do this for a living. And I was like, what do you think of the game? And everyone's telling me the Chargers. Ah, it's the Chargers. It's why? Well, and then here's the breakdown. The Raiders don't have a good pass rush, which was evident in pretty much every statistical metric. I think they were bottom 5 in sacks. They don't generate a lot of pressure. They got a young, unproven defensive line for the most part. And they were telling me Phillip Rivers is going to be able to sit back there and pick apart the defense. And as a result, Chargers are going to win that game. That's why they all liked it. So I kind of backed off. I said to myself, I'm going to play the over. I had a couple props that missed, hit on the over, whatever. But what they predicted wasn't the outcome, specifically, in my opinion, because of the crowd noise. That crowd made that play so hostile, so loud. The Raiders were getting off the ball so fast defensively. Phillip Rivers, I can't think of a single drop back last night where he kind of just sat there, scanned the field, worked through his progressions, found an open receiver. He found open receivers, but he was moving. He was panicking. He was skittish in the pocket last night. The 5 sacks that team generated in that game big round of applause for the crowd last night, because if that place takes that game takes place on a neutral, if it takes place on the road, and a real road game, not wherever they play,
gotcha,
or you have no crowd whatsoever, they're not getting after Rivers like that. The crowd played a major role in that game last night, much like they did in the Denver game earlier in the season. That's as good as you've seen that pass rush all year.
And that's as good as the crowd has been, and the crowd continues to be awesome there as fans count down the last few games at the Coliseum. I was out there for the Lion tailgate the game before, and you could feel a certain amount of melancholy, bittersweet feeling among the fans, loving what this Raider team is doing, but at the same time realizing that the end of the era there is closing in. You talk about those games upcoming, and it's Cincinnati, and it's the Jets, and even the road games you have, you don't have a lot of rugged road spots left. You go down to SubHub to take on the Chargers. That's basically a home game with the crowd that you have in L.A., and every team's gone to SubHub this year and felt like they're at home, so even though you've been great at the Coliseum, this Raider team doesn't have a brutal road stretch ahead.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about going down to the Snub Hub. That is going to be a Raider fans, no doubt. It was just good to see, you know, we talked about a guy that I love to watch him play too. He likes to hit you, Carl Joseph. I mean, that guy, that little safety.
He knocked Melvin Gordon out for a play on the goal line towards the end of the game.
You're watching
They sent him right back in there where it's like, this is the NFL. See, this is why these guys have these problems. He came out for a play, he signaled. We saw the replay. It's like, man, Joseph laid the wood.
He got hit.
And then Lynn lets one play go, and then he looks at Gordon. Get back in there. No one wants to even ask the guy how he's doing.
Right.
He just got rocked.
He got rocked. They were hitting last night. It was a good Thursday night game. Both teams were competitive. You know, you see the defense like you alluded to, Joe. That crowd noise had them going. They were hyped up. They were coming off the corners. They were hitting Phillip. He did not have a lot of time in that pocket. You saw the young receivers, guys stepping up. You know, they've done a great job of kind of turning the narrative. And right now, they're right there in the thick of things, especially when you're talking about the AFC. Besides, you know, the Patriots, when you look at it, it's wide open, the AFC.
What's the ceiling?
I think the ceiling this year is definitely, I think for sure, I'm not going to say for sure, but like I said, I think it's a 60-40. I think they're in the playoffs because of their schedule. You look at their schedule, you alluded to it, you're playing the Jets, you got Cincinnati, you got several teams on there, the Chargers that you have on the schedule, you got Denver on the schedule, that's going to be tough in Denver.
But is the ceiling get in and then probably lose, which isn't a bad thing. No one projected them as a playoff team before the season started, that's not what I'm getting at. But we've gotten to a point where with the Niners, we've recalibrated to say the ceiling is the Super Bowl. We have seen them as a team that could get to the Super Bowl. It shouldn't be a total shock to see that. What would be the ceiling for the Raiders right now?
Honestly, when you look at the AFC, if this was the NFC, I would be singing a different song. Are you scared of Buffalo? Are you scared to go travel to Buffalo?
They probably don't meet each other, though. Those are probably your wild card teams.
I think the ceiling...
But I see what you're saying.
For me, the ceiling is the divisional round. You can win the wild card game because, to your point, if you're the sixth seed, you play the third-seeded division champ, which probably would be somebody of Houston or maybe it's a Kansas City team that Lowe thinks you got a good chance to beat. You almost beat them the first time anyway.
Jeez, so at Arrowhead.
That's
although
tough.
It's been easy to get them in the playoffs outside of the Tennessee game last year.
Let's
or
just
was
say
it Indy game.
It's at Houston. If you somehow get to go play at Houston, that's
the one
a winnable
you'd want.
Game.
You don't
that's
want Baltimore. You don't want New England.
Right.
And you probably don't want Kansas City. You probably want to go to Houston. Houston has a habit of getting in, and then that's the end of them.
To me, that's the ceiling. And Lowe's laying out the playoff possibilities. And when you look at it from a tiebreaker standpoint, the first tiebreaker outside of head-to-head is record within the conference. And that's why all those games you're talking about, the Jets, AFC game, that becomes a must-win. Cincinnati is a must-win because you might wind up 10-6, and there probably will be at least one other, if not two other 10-6 teams, so that tiebreaker comes into play. And you have the head-to-head over Indy. I don't think the Raiders play Buffalo, so that won't factor in, but it comes down to conference record when you have these tiebreakers.
All right, 8:45 on a Friday. You know what that means.
It's time for Man vs. Machine.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Will the measly humans be able to outsmart the superior machine intellect? Let's find out.
And just remember, it's Man versus Machine.
Man versus Machine, the battle for the greater good, brought to you by our friends at Schroeder's, EA Sports, and PlayStation. If you're new to the segment, here's how it works. Every Thursday during the NFL season, we run a Madden simulation of the Niner game. Updated rosters, updated injuries, all that stuff. It's as legitimate as can be. The machine produces its result. The result is placed into into this envelope right here. And what we do is we don't get to see it. We have to make our picks. And by the end of the season, who wins, man or machine? So, gentlemen, Dibs, I turn it over to you right now. Where do we stand right now in man versus machine?
Right now, we're in the wild card spot, Joe, because the machine is leading the division. The machine is 5-3. We are a game back at 4-4. So we don't need to make some headway on the machine, but we are trailing and there are 8 weeks left to go.
Okay, it's a game back. Not the end of the world, but it's a game back, so we got to find a way to make that up. Sure. Maybe we end up pushing again, so we got to figure out what we're going to do. We also have losers coming up today at 9:20. Are we going to pick the Niner game? Well, we're picking it one way or another right now, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, we'll do that today, I think. We'll go ahead and knock out all the business today.
Niners -6 over the Seahawks. We do pick against the spread. That's what matters. The spread is the great equalizer between man versus bookmaker and man versus machine. Low, what are you thinking here? Would you lay the 6 with San Francisco or would you take the 6 with Seattle?
I think I'm going to take the 6 with Seattle. I think I'm going to take, I wouldn't lay it. I think I'm taking the 6 with Seattle. I think this is going to be a very confident. This is that passing of the torch. I think this game is going to be close.
But you think the 49ers will win, but you think Seattle keeps it within 6. Is that the sense I'm getting?
Yeah.
All right, you got the Seahawks +6.
Yeah, I would be in the same church, but a different pew, because I think Seattle actually wins the game. But same church, I think taking the 6 is the play. Different pew, because I think the torch doesn't get passed just yet.
Have you picked against them every week?
Not every week.
Because there are people on the text line that love it when you pick against them.
Demanding
they think you
I
are
pick
the
against
one.
Them.
Last
yeah.
week
that,
he picked them, though.
You picked Niners last week?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
yes.
So it's not an every week sort of thing.
No, and I think I did have Carolina, as luck would have it. But I'm down by 13 games in Low versus Dibs. If I just would have picked the Niners every time, I think I'd be down by 7 games. So there's that.
All right, so it doesn't matter what I say. I do like the idea of laying the points with the Niners. I think you're going to end up closing all your teases with the Niners as well. I think Seattle's built on a house of cards. I really do. Great quarterback, not to take anything away from him. What else do they do well? At home, with what's supposed to be the best home field advantage, or one of the best home field advantages in all of football, look at how they've performed this year. 0-5, I believe it is, against the spread, depending on what number you got in the Tampa Bay game. They needed overtime at home to get past Tampa Bay in a game where they were losing for the majority of the game. They needed the Rams to miss a makeable field goal at the end of regulation to get past the Rams on a Thursday night when they had the short week. They beat the Bengals by 1. And if you look at what they've done on the road, they went to Pittsburgh and saw Ben Roethlisberger get hurt. They went to Cleveland and saw the Browns do everything they could to give that game away. The thing with Seattle is similar to San Francisco. People want to knock the Niners for their schedule. Let's talk about Seattle's schedule. What have they done this season? Outside of Russell Wilson, the defense this year is very vulnerable. They rank 25th or worse in most metrics in terms of scoring defense, in terms of sacks, in terms of pass defense. If this game is going to be the Niners, and it's going to be done in convincing fashion, it's going to be the Niners through the air. This is an opportunity for Garoppolo, Mr. Primetime, after what he did on Thursday night, to come back on a Monday in front of the entire world in the biggest game of the season, probably in the biggest game of his career, light them up for 300 yards, outdo Russell Wilson, and have everyone thinking they might have the wrong guy as a candidate for MVP. Not saying he wins MVP, but I do think he plays well enough in this game to not only win, to not only cover the spread, but some hot taker on a national network is going to try to make that case come Tuesday morning. So, you two, majority rules. You end up going with Seattle, whether it's Seattle outright or Seattle plus the points. So the team is on Seattle. Man is on Seattle here. Machine is on Niners 24, Seahawks 21. So Machine is on Seattle as well. No blood. No blood this week.
There you have it.
Curse you, Machine. He might just draw us out the rest of the way. He or she. Actually, it's probably she. Very clever the way they're up on us right now.
We may have to start changing our approach here, though.
I'm with it.
You know, we got 8 games to go, and this one, so now 7 games to go because there'll be no blood. But trailing the Machine by 1. And if there's a tie at the end of the regular season, it will carry over into the playoffs.
Yeah, we actually never even thought about that. We were doing this for most of the year. And shout out our good friends at Schroeder's, EA Sports, and PlayStation.
Yes,
and then one day we were like, what if we're tied? And it's like, man, the bit would be awful if we ended up tying.
Especially
that's
if
the problem of the world is on the line and we tie.
Yeah.
That's pretty much how humanity would do it, though. If it really came down to a war in man versus machine, we'd probably tie. And we'd just be living amongst each other.
Some say
fighting
we already
in
are.
Parliament. Yeah. Instead of Republicans, Democrats, it's just humans and robots fighting each other for control of the Senate, and nothing gets done. The machines will turn out to be just as corrupt. All right. You know what? Let me bring that point up from... Oh, Congratulations to, why can't it ever be John Smith that wins? Griselda Montenegro.
Yes.
Not to be confused with Serbia and Montenegro. Mm. Griselda and Montenegro from San Jose. Congratulations. We will see you Monday. You just won the wristbands to join us for the pre- and post-game party at the Hilton at Levi's Stadium. Is this the biggest game of Jimmy Garoppolo's career?
Yes, without a doubt. And this is the biggest game in the history of Levi's Stadium. The biggest 49er game before all the texters want a national championship me into submission or Super Bowl me. Yes, the biggest Niner game in the history of Levi's Stadium. Lowe had the expression during his great breakdown about passing the torch. And you're not the one to invent that saying, but I think it's appropriate for this matchup because if Seattle comes in here and wins, it's somewhat business as usual, and you haven't yet fully arrived as the team to beat in the NFC West. But if you beat Seattle, that would be two straight wins over Seattle going back to last year, and you get the sense that maybe the torch has been passed. I like that expression, Lowe.
Yeah, and it's going to be, I think that you're going to have a team that's going to come in and, excuse me, and say, let's keep it close. Let's go ahead and let's see if, have they been, can they win a close game? Can we put, keep the pressure on them? Don't let them run away and let them play from behind, and then they can pin their ears back on Russell Wilson. Brian Schottenheimer knows that. He knows the crowd's going to be geeked. He knows the crowd's going to be excited. And he's like, look, I'm not going to play into their hands. I'm not going to come out here and start just throwing the ball all over to play in basketball on the grass. I'm going to come out here. We're going to pound the ball. And they're going to see if their defense can hold up. And they're going to try to, you know, shut down the run and see if Jimmy can beat them again. They're going to see if this is just, is this lightning in the bottle? Is just a one-time thing? So you know what Seattle's going to do. They want to put Jimmy in that type of situation. But they want to definitely keep it close. And by running the ball and say, look, if we keep it close, let's get them in a situation where if they blink. So Seattle's saying, hey, we've been there. And Richard Sherman's in that locker room. This is where his veteran and his leadership should be at its forefront, making sure that the guys know what Seattle, how they view your team and your organization.
Bob and the Billions in just a moment. Get them in. Chilton Auto Body text line 95795. Bob and the Billions in just a moment. I'm wondering if the crowd can get as rowdy and create as hostile an environment as we saw last night. No doubt in my mind that the Raider crowd had an effect on that game. That's why I have always been a proponent that if a fan wants to say we have a big game tonight, we're going to the Super Bowl. I've always been okay with that because I believe the fans do have an outcome on the game. A lot of people will say, well, you could say we because I spent money on the tickets and the jerseys and all that. That's fine, too. But I do believe crowds have effects on games. I think if that game was played in an empty stadium last night, you don't get the same result. I think the crowd has an effect. I truly do. Crowd noise, jumping off sides, things of that nature. Seattle has been known for that for a long, long time. This is going to be the biggest test for the faithful. They're going to have to show up Monday night and make it as hostile as an environment. You get the chance to pay back Seattle for everything that happened to you every time your team went up there in a big game. The NFC Championship game. I remember that week two game on Sunday night when it was so loud. I was the only time I've ever been to CenturyLink. It was so loud, I couldn't hear my wife next to me. She was next to me screaming. I couldn't hear her. It was so loud in that place. You have a chance to disrupt them. And you have all day to get, shall we say, nice and lubricated to be able to pull off the task that is in front of you.
They can't.
You want to elaborate on that?
No, I think I'll get another side, but I just think that I don't think the stadium, I don't think it'll be rocking like Oakland. The Coliseum is just, those fans are just, they're crazy.
Smaller too. Levi's is bigger. Yeah, the crowd, a lot of the crowd is further away. It's going to be tougher, but I think Niner fans can come close, but they have to bring it.
Let's do that on the other side. 888-957-9570. Can Levi's get as loud as the Coliseum, or is Lowe right? Nothing can get as loud as the Coliseum. Certainly not Levi's. 888-957-9570. Time for Bob and the Billions.
Do you have any say over what your office was going to look like here? Great question. Yeah.
Well, you can go see it after there. You can go see it. Lowe can come. Just Lowe.
You know what? Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, that's usually how it is.
No, it takes too much abuse here. I got to be honest. I listen to you guys.
Now, I love this. You're one of the billions?
You know what? One of the billions. Yes.
Man, one of the billions. Bob Myers. So great.
Bobby loves us.
Bobby loves us. He loves his song, too. He's the one who's insisted that this gets played before every war game, in fact. Straight off the iPad. Actually, it was his iPod Shuffle when he first heard this. I got that on a source, actually.
All right, Bobby the Billions, get him in. 95795 on the Chilton Auto Body text line. The goon from Suswan. S-U-I-S-U-N. What is that?
Sassoon.
The goon from Sassoon.
Too soon from Sassoon. That's right there by Fairfield, Joe. In the Sassoon Slough.
Will loves Karina from the Hoe. Now we're just getting requests. Baby girl Ramel.
Baby girl Ramel.
The Chicos from San Mateo, a.k.a. San Maghetto, a.k.a. Mateo, a.k.a. Six Filthy.
Man.
Six Filthy and the 650. A lot going on. That's like 12 shout-outs in one. Naked Nico from the Mita, of course.
Oh, Naked Nico from the Mita.
He goes on to say, Dibs ate toothpaste in elementary school.
Oh.
In fact, Carlito from the Stack.
Oh, Carlito.
Big Marv in the Zay.
I see you, Marv.
White Claw Neil AMR San Mateo.
I see you, White Claw.
Carlito from the Stack. Two times.
Oh, God.
I can't even keep up with these. Eddie Haskell, we see you. You don't need to send in 10,000.
Oh, Eddie. Go ahead.
Grilled cheese and soup for a tailgate. Oh, this guy's just asking if there would be grilled cheese and soup at the tailgate party.
Yeah, no doubt.
We'll look into that.
No doubt.
At least from a nickname perspective, grilled cheese and tomato soup.
Yeah,
Low and Diz will be there.
I do want to shout out all the North Bay high schools, Joe, wrapping up their regular season in football. It's supposed to be playoffs, but with the fires, Healdsburg and Montgomery, Ranch Cotati, Windsor, Piners undefeated. They get to play their last regular season game. It's cool the section moved the playoffs back a week because of all the tragedy with the fires. So.
Perfect way to wrap up Bob and the Billions. Thank you very much, Dibs. All right, Drew Bennett's with us on the other side. Phone calls as well. We got a lot to get to. Losers is coming up. Big final hour in store. Jolo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
We're going to play on and stand strong. With Jolo and Dibs, turn the game on. Bump up the volume. It's time to play ball. With Jolo and Dibs, turn the game on.
All right, boys and girls, happy Friday and welcome to the championship rounds of Jolo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Outstanding to have you with us today. Losers, the segment that is sweeping its way across the northern portion of Italy. We're not big in Rome. We're not big with the islands, but for some reason up at the Dolomites, very big up there. It's not a very populous region, but shout out the Dolomites. We love you. So that's coming up at about 9:20. Call of the game, not today. That will be coming up on Monday, so check us out at 9:30 for a chance to win a gift certificate to Schroeder's. But right now we go to the Dialpad guest line, former NFL wide receiver. You can catch him on KTVU's Point After, Drew Bennett, joining Jolo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Drew, thank you for your time as always. Let's start with the big game at the Coliseum last night. That was a good one. That was a real good one. The Raiders emerged victorious, and now it's got people thinking with the remaining schedule, could this potentially be a playoff team?
I mean, we hope so, right? They sure won the game. You know, last night was very important for two reasons. One is the 2-minute drives before the half for Carr in the offense, and then at the end of the game, obviously, to come back and score the go-ahead touchdown. Those are the types of, like, good teams make those drives, right? Good teams can be down. Good teams can score at the end of the half and score at the end of the game, and that's got to be a huge confidence booster for them. And then the other thing that I noticed last night was that was a really sloppy game with the penalties and the turnovers and stuff like that. I know the turnovers were all on San Diego's side, but to win a sloppy game like that and to be able to have that many penalties and still come back and win that game, that is a big confidence booster as well. Now, I think you have to clean those penalties up to beat better teams, but it's nice to have a win like that.
Was it more about the Raider defense being aggressive and getting after?